They said, we want a king like the rest of the nations. We want a king. Now, Samuel took that personally, and what does God say? They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me from being king over them. And I think there's a really important parallel for us to think about there. And that is that Jesus, and let's look at that first paragraph now. Jesus was made all things head over the church, which is his body. Now, in a human body, what is the head designed to do? Well, about everything, right? The head directs all the organs. The head directs all of the activities, what the body's going to do, how the body's going to respond. Everything is controlled by the body, by the head. So when God made Jesus head over all things the church, what was he saying?
He's in control of everything.
I've made him in control of everything. Now, let's remember who he is. He's King of Kings. He's Lord of Lords. He created the heavens and the earth. I mean, do we have a pretty great king? King of Kings over the kingdom? Head over the church? So, why would we want to substitute him for a human organization? And that's the question. All right, let's go ahead and turn, because I've pretty well covered everything I wanted to cover on the first page. And most of the second page. Let me start at that bottom paragraph on page 2. Sadly, the attitude of the 10 spies lives on today in the church. All right? Jesus is infinitely powerful. He knows the hearts of all men. He knows right now, does he know everyone in Denver who would obey the gospel? Does he have the power to bring us to him? And that's what we have to understand. We don't need, I mean, if you look at this church and you say, this church has a responsibility to go into all the world, preach the gospel, we can't do it, therefore what do we need? We need an organization that all the churches can send their money to, but do we need that? Don't we already have that? See, we already have that. We have Jesus. Jesus is the head over all things to the church. And we learned last week, let's turn to page 3. Because what we learned last week is, and let's look at that second paragraph, or the first full paragraph, it was never God's intention that man be fully responsible for the work of evangelism. Now, that may sound like we're passing the responsibility of evangelism off to God, but that's not the case. We have a fellowship. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, I planted, Apollos watered. Who gave the increase?
God.
All right, God gave the increase. So then, he who plants and waters are what?
Nothing.
Could he make it any clearer? In God's view of evangelism, what are the planter and the waterer? Nothing. So, for us to say, we need a human institution because God's put this all on us, could Paul make it any clearer he didn't put it all on us? Now, let's look at how this was done. Because I want to make sure that we don't misunderstand this point. All right. So that next paragraph, God promised this would be done long before Jesus was born. In Isaiah 11, it says that God would set his hand the second time to recover the remnant of his people who were left and assemble the outcasts of Israel from all four corners of the earth. Now, can we do that? Can we search the corners of the earth? This one local church, can we go out and can we search and find all the people that are ready to be baptized? Can we do that? No. Can God do that? Yeah. Can Jesus do that? Absolutely. If Jesus has given the responsibility of a local church the responsibility to tend that flock, and Jesus has left the church very weak when it comes to evangelism. I mean, from a human viewpoint, this is why man's just always wanting to get his hand in it. Because Jesus left the church weak. Every church is autonomous. We can't even contact the other churches to find out what they're doing. We are responsible for the opportunities that come our way. And that's what God says. God says, at the very bottom of that second, third paragraph, there will be a highway for the remnant of his people who will be left from Assyria, as it was for Israel in the day that he came out from the land of Egypt. So God makes the direct parallel. Your work in evangelism will be identical to how I brought Israel out of Egypt. So you don't have to worry about that part. You need to buy up every opportunity. Now, I'm not saying all of this to say we just sit back in our easy chairs and we seek opportunities. And when we seek opportunities, God will make sure we find them. You remember when the Apostle Paul and Barnabas, we look at his first missionary journey and we say, wow, Paul did a lot of work. But it was the Holy Spirit who said, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work I have called them to do. So being sent out by the Holy Spirit, then they did their work, and then when they came back, they said this. They rehearsed all that God had done with them. So did Paul and Barnabas see themselves as the initiators or as the ones who were being used by God? Now, did that end in the first century? That's why we need human institutions today, because God has left it all on us, just like the children of Israel going into Canaan. He left it all on them. No, he didn't. He did not do that. He actually told Gideon, I don't remember where I put it now, I think it's on the second page, but he said, there's too many of you, so we're going to get it down, what was it, 120 or 200 or something? He said, we're going to get it down so that you won't say, by my hand, we did this, but I will be glorified. Now, when Peter, hang on, Peter says, we need to minister with the strength which God supplies. Well, God supplied us elders, and he told the elders, you tend that flock among you. And God knew that those flocks were going to be small, because Jesus said, the way that leads to life is straitened and narrow. How many are going to find it? Just a few. But God has left the salvation of every man, woman on the face of the earth from the moment Jesus' death on the cross until the end of time to churches that are small, local, without any ability to tie themselves together to really get the work done by ourselves. And yet, what does Jesus promise? I'll take care of that part. Now, if in the 1850s Alexander Campbell had recognized that, would he felt the need to create the American Christian Missionary Society? What he did is he replaced the eternal Son of God and his work for a human institution, and where did it go?
South.
It went south. Now we have a Christian church that doesn't even believe that the Old Testament is inspired. They're all just myths. And then, in the previous century, in 1950 and 60, the church once again felt like it needed to band together. And where are they now? See, they're off. They're the ones who are fighting in Malawi. They're the ones who are saying you don't need to be baptized. They're the ones who are saying instrumental music's okay. They're the ones who are saying we never should have left the Christian church. So I gave them a king in my anger, and I took him away in my wrath. We are following the same folly and stupidity that Israel did, and we need to wake up. And so, yes, the churches of Christ are getting smaller and smaller, but that's telling us that God isn't able to find what? There isn't anybody to find. If there were people out there, then those of us who are working, those of us who are looking for opportunities, we would find them. Okay, Rob, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm glad you brought that point out. There was a point in my life, even I was just super frustrated with results. Just people weren't listening, your neighbors, coworkers, and then the point you're making, I was like, no, we're commanded to sow the seed. The seed falls on the hearts of man, depending on who they are, right?
Right.
That's the parallel. You don't see God saying, take that seed and push it into them, and they're going to listen, and they're going to... No. It's never been that way. Right. It's never been that way. But you make a good point. Now that, again, we can't let our frustration become... I've heard brethren say, well, there's nobody in Denver. We've tried. There's just nobody here. Really? If we have that defeatist attitude, then we'll stop teaching locally because we just think nobody's going to listen.
Right.
We don't know. That one opportunity on a certain day that we come across somebody, maybe God's putting people together to help that person.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, and there's a fine line here, and I don't want to get too close to it, but let's look at that next paragraph here. It says, God did not leave this critically important work to man alone. And then in the book of Ezekiel, he says, I myself will search for my sheep and seek them out. I seek out my sheep and deliver them from all the places where they were scattered. And then he says, I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries. Now, we know he did that in the first century. Does he do it today? Is God the same?
Yeah,
he's the same. So I don't believe that there'll be anybody before the judgment bar of God that God wanted to be with him in heaven who won't have had the opportunity to hear the gospel. And so I'm not so sure about that song, You Never Mentioned Him to Me. I mean, I understand the teachings behind it and the effort that it should push us to do more. But do we really think that if we don't mention it to someone, that God can't find somebody else who will take care of that, that he doesn't want? Does he want anyone to be lost? He wants all men to come to the knowledge of the truth. So we have to have that confidence. Now again, that doesn't alleviate the responsibility that we have, because if God went to all the effort to get us in, with this person, and we don't buy up the opportunity, what are we doing as far as God is concerned? We're frustrating his work. We need to be ready. But we don't need a human institution to gather everything together, because it's all on us. It's never been, it never will be. George?
Well, the other side of that is that God expects everyone to seek him. And not everyone is going to be seeking him.
Right.
But that should be going on, as well as what we do and what God does with regard to getting us together with someone else and so forth.
Right. And that's an interesting point, because when Peter says, sanctify Jesus as Lord in your heart, being ready to do what?
Give answer.
Give an answer. All right. Is that active or passive? Give an answer.
Active.
It's active, but who's asking the question? You give an answer to somebody who's not asking a question?
Right.
You are responsible for people who are interested. You know, we meet people, and they know we're Christians, and every time we try to get the subject over there, what do?
Divert it.
They change directions. I have a neighbor who actually said, look, we can get along with each other as long as you let me live the way I want to live, and I'll let you live the way you want to live. Okay, what do we do now? Is he going to ask? Do I have any answers for that? No. And you and I have all done that many times in our lives. We've had an opportunity, tried to bring it around, told them we're a Christian, or told them that we are members of the Church of Christ, or done something hoping for a question, hoping that there'll be an opening. If there's no opening, according to Peter, what do I do now? They didn't ask for anything. So I can keep trying. But like I said, I'm not, you know, I used to beat myself up. It's all on me. It's all on me. I've got to make sure of these people. But God made it very clear that I'm going to gather them. And then I look at the very middle of that page or that paragraph. It says, I will establish one shepherd over them, my servant David. So, again, this is not a class on evangelism. I'm not really, I just want to make sure that we all understand that God has this covered. That if this local church can't get to China, it can't get to Russia, it can't get to Hawaii, it can't get to all these different places, we've got to get on this, so we're going to have to create something to do that. Do we have to do that? See, we don't have to do that. We just buy up our opportunities. I think right now we're doing about all we can handle with India and Malawi. If God brought three more countries into our grasp, what would we do? See, and I'm not saying I hope that doesn't happen, because I hope it does happen. But I think that because of our attitude, our faith, our commitment to the Lord, that he's opened these doors to us. And we've rushed in. I mean, we are actively involved in evangelism in India. We're actively involved in evangelism and in edification and in preaching the word in Malawi. So the only point I'm trying to make is not on a personal level. I'm not trying to alleviate the need that we have to get out there and do what we can to buy up every opportunity. I'm just saying that God said, I will search for my sheep and seek them out. I will seek out my sheep. I will bring them out of the peoples, and I will gather them from the countries. And he did that in the first century, and I believe he's still doing it today. Otherwise, we do need American Christian Missionary Society. We do need to sponsor a church. We do need something to get the word out, because this local church can't do it. But once we understand, his church doesn't have to do it, because God said he will do that part. So now, we're just like the 12 spies. Okay, 10 of them said, we can't do this alone. Were they alone? 2 of the spies said, we're more than capable. So, the Church of Christ in Denver is more than capable of going into all the world preaching the gospel, because who's got our back? God. The same God who had their back. We don't need a king like the rest of the nations, because God will take care of those things. All right, David, I saw you were starting to raise your hand. Did you have something?
You answered it. I was just going to come in on Brother George's statement about people seeking God more or less. They need to be seeking, but it needs to be his way, not theirs.
Right. Okay. All right, so this last paragraph, those with true faith are perfectly content to work in their own local church. Planting, watering, trusting God. We see no need to replace God's divine plan with some feeble human substitute. All service to God in the church must be done with the strength God supplies. That's what Peter says, with the strength God supplies. God supplied the local church. Didn't supply anything else. And I make this point, we'll make it probably next week, we'll get to this, but God gave the first day of the week contribution. Now, what a feeble way to get money. Free will contributions from a small group of people who are very poor. Because didn't James say, the poor of the earth are the ones who are obeying the gospel? So we have a very feeble way of getting money. But what can God do? Does God really need our money?
No.
No. And can God help us to get... We were getting low on funds. We were thinking that we might have to start cutting back on our support, and all of a sudden here comes $200,000 into the account from somebody who just happened to meet my son in Kentucky, I think it was. He's from Idaho. Paul's from Oklahoma. And they met, I think, in Georgia or Kentucky. And I got introduced to him, we talked, and he wanted to send $200,000. Now, was that a feeble way? You say, well, that's just time and chance. I don't think it is. I think that God opened a door, and we bought it, and of course it was a free will contribution, so we can do whatever we want with it. But my point is, yeah, the church here is small, and yes, there are limited resources, but can God supplement them anytime he wants? And that's the key here. So, all right. So let's look at this last point, because I think it's interesting. And it is the one that I was talking about earlier. The Lord said to Gideon, this is just about an inch below the bottom of the page, by the 300 men who lapped, I will save you. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Sorry, I lost your name, man. You said that earlier, right? 300?
The lapped.
Yeah, 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I said thank you. All right. By the 300 men who lapped, I will save you. Nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few. So, sponsoring churches that are taking money from other congregations in order to do the work, taking oversight over that money, that's not scriptural. And if we had any doubts that it was scriptural, look where they are today. Because Jesus said, look at the fruits. So these people who were so adamant that we need the herald of truth and we need this $1 million, we need to put Highland Church of Christ over this money so that this work can be done, and now the herald of truth is teaching that we should never have left the Christian church, that instrumental music is fine, that baptism is not essential. Does that give you a clue what happens? when you put a human institution over God's work? Would God have done that? If we just left it in God's hands, would we be here today? See, we'd be here. The whole church would be right where we are because we didn't go with them. All right, Rob?
To me, it's really an insult. Do we know who we're serving? Here's God that created the universe, created us, created all good things, and we're limiting God and his ability because that's what man is really saying. Well, there's a better way. No. I mean, it's an insult.
That's right.
That God, we're limiting God and his ability.
Right.
In our own mind. And it's sad. And as you brought out, yeah, it happened in the 50s and 60s, but it continues today.
Yeah.
Most religions do not do it God's way.
I think the biggest problem is that people today can't separate the miraculous from the permanent manner in which God was going to work. They think when the miraculous was done away, God stopped doing anything.
Well.
And that's not true. Because God said, this is going to be a highway. Now, can this congregation make a highway for God's for people to come back to God? God can. So, I think that's our problem. George?
The command to go into all the world basically originally was primarily to the apostles. And we also read in Colossians, I believe it is, that the gospel was indeed preached throughout the world in the first century. And so when we see that there's very few people today that are willing to follow the gospel, for the various reasons that you're mentioning and so forth, we need to remember that the fact that there's not very many people being saved today, or not very many people who are already saved apparently in churches such as this one here, that it's man's fault, not God's. God's plan worked well in the first century,
right.
And man has gone to the dogs since.
That's a good point. But in the 40s and 50s, you could set up a tent in a community, and what could you do before the week was over?
People.
You could start a church. And so, was that man? No, it was still God. It was just, there was... The fullness of time that the people in the first century lived in, we had in America in the 1830s and 40s, the Church of Christ was growing the fastest of any group. That's what's happening in Malawi right now. That's what happened in America in the 40s and 50s. But then man says, we're going to build on this, so we need an American Christian Missionary Society, or we need a sponsoring church arrangement. And as soon as they did that, the church divided, and guess what happened to growth? The very thing they were trying to accentuate was destroyed by what they did. So we can't, there is a generation, you remember we talked about this a few weeks ago, the generation of Joshua served the Lord fervently, but the generation beyond Joshua did, but what happened after that?
Rose a generation, didn't
they? Yeah, they didn't know the Lord, they went after the Baals. We see the same in David's generation. We see the same in part of Solomon's generation, but what happened after Solomon died? 10 tribes went off to idolatry. 2 tribes left the temple. God had to send Pharaoh in to punish Rehoboam for what he'd done. All right, so any other comments before we move on to the next section? Brian?
Yeah, one thing I've always appreciated about how God operates is that he's always given man a part in what he wants to execute. So like these 300 men, or when the Israelites went into the land of Canaan, he said, you drive these people out. Now, I'm going to be with you, but you have a responsibility here. And
right.
So it's the same with our contribution compared to the 200,000. Who knows how much this congregation gives in comparison to that. But we are being tested. Are we going to say, hey, we have all this money in the bank, I don't need to give as much? No, we have a part in this.
Right.
And so every part of the old law, the new law, God no doubt is in control, but he's giving us, in essence, a test. Are you going to do what you need to do? Are you going to buy up those opportunities? And it's always been that way. And it's a test of our faith. It's a test of, are we going to do exactly what God wants? Are we going to rely on him? Or are we going to, you know, just assume he'll take care
right.
of it? And so it's a nice
Yeah, and that's what I've always appreciated about this congregation. Whenever a need arises, do we rise to the occasion? But that's finite. I mean, if we sold everything we had, could we keep going? So at some point, we have to, and we've done this several times, I think, since I've been here. We had a surplus, we spent it down, and what did we say?
We'll see.
We've got to cut back for a little while. Then we got a surplus, and we jumped in again. But we all knew that even though we're all giving as much as we can, and as I've said many times, I'm amazed at how much this congregation is giving, considering the number of people that are here. So I'm not trying to minimize the good that this congregation is doing. I'm just saying with all the good we're doing, and we were reaching a point where we were looking at maybe having to cut back again, and all of a sudden we get this influx, and we're able to go on. But if we weren't doing what we were doing, that influx would have only lasted, I think it would be gone already, if we weren't continuing to do what we're doing. So, Patrick?
Some of you have a wrong conception concerning the gospel. Because sometimes we think that the gospel has not reached to certain places. Now we think that the gospel needs to be reached. But let's look at a biblical example, or look at Elijah, for example. Elijah told God he was the only one that left. And God told him, no. And then people who have not bowed down to what?
To Adam. That's a good point.
Yeah, so you see, we should not look at and say that come for men is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So if we think that gospel has not reached there, God has already used somebody to get the gospel that already preached. So before you get there, then.
Right. And that's an interesting point, because what did Jesus tell Paul in Corinth? He said, don't be afraid because I have many people. Well, why didn't Paul know about it?
Because
they hadn't been converted yet. They weren't baptized yet, and yet, so what did Jesus call them?
His people.
My people. So here's Paul in a very ungodly place, being persecuted, and Jesus coming and saying, you don't have to be afraid, Paul, because I have many people in this city. Yeah. But Paul didn't know who they were. So that's a good point, Patrick, and that's the thing. And the fields are wide under the harvest, because there's a lot of people out there who are just waiting for an opportunity to obey the gospel. As far as God is concerned, you remember what he said about Cornelius before he became a Christian?
Yes, sir.
Your prayers and your alms have gone up as a memorial to God. A memorial of what? That this man will obey the gospel as soon as Peter preaches it to him. And he did. Now, am I saying these much people are saved? I didn't say that. But I said Jesus recognized them as his people. But in order to get them into heaven, what does they have to do? Well, that's why Paul's there. He's got to get them to obey the gospel. So the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. But the power of God is also working outside of the gospel only to bring us to the people who need to hear the gospel. Yeah, that doesn't alleviate any responsibility on our part. All right, again, any other comments before we move on to the work of the church? Okay. All right, so this is another major change that we're seeing in these institutional churches of Christ or liberal churches of Christ or those who have left us, who went out from us many, many years ago. And what they've done is they have changed the work of the church. Now the buildings are used for eating in. They are used for allowing people to vote there. They're used like a community center. They have an opportunity for people who have no money that are in the world to come and be taken care of. They are getting involved in hospitals, they're getting involved in schools, they're getting involved in orphanages, they're getting involved in all sorts. And would anybody disagree that these aren't good works? No, they're good works. But are they the work God created the church to do? See, that's the key. If individual members of the church want to pool their money after they've given to the Lord and build an orphanage, are we going to say they can't do it? No, they can do that if they want to. It's a good work. But if they took that same money and gave it to the Lord for the Lord's work, would that be more important than building an orphanage? See, and I think that's a no-brainer. I think that the Lord needs the direct help of his people, and that their work should primarily be focused through the church, and again, opportunities like yesterday I sent out an email that Yada would like a car. The church can't take care of that because of some issues. So individually, and if we did that, that wouldn't be wrong because we're still doing the work of the Lord. Virgil, you had Hannah?
Yeah, just a comment. Kind of a different way of looking at some of this. I personally don't think that we have any slack whatsoever with the treasury or the institutional churches also. I guess it's all into this, to take that money and build orphanages and all that kind of stuff and call that a good work. It can't be a good work if it's a violation of God's principles, what it's supposed to be used for.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I said individually, if we thought we wanted to do it.
But that doesn't happen individually.
No, I know it.
Yeah.
I know it.
You know, that's the only thing, you know, I can remember years ago, time Martha and I met each other, there was an evangelist come down from Anchorage, Alaska, and preached a 2 or 3 day meeting there at Jefferson Street in Spokane. And he spent the whole time talking about what the church could do, and called it at that time also good work, building hospitals and all of this kind of stuff that is greatly needed. And nobody would deny that hospitals need it, but don't take it. Try to take it from the Lord's treasury and call that a good work, because it's not.
That's right.
It's a violation of God's will that happens.
Right. But what they're doing, what we might call a bait and a switch, They're calling it a good work, and it is a good work. I mean, there's no doubt it's a good work. But is it the good work God prepared the church to walk in? Answer is no. But they keep twisting it around. Well, you're saying the church shouldn't be involved in good works. No, we're saying the church shouldn't be involved in that good. Well, isn't this a good work? And then, you remember the argument? The Church of Christ will spend money for fertilizer to fertilize their lawn, but if there's an orphan on the front porch, they're going to kick them away and say, get out of here. Is that what we did? But that's what they do. These Annies, they just don't care about people. They care about their buildings. Well, there's an expediency that allows us to take care of the building because that's part of the work of the church. And there's a command that we should take care of orphans. But does the church do it or individuals? And the fact of the case is it's individuals. Now, if an individual's taking care of orphans and he can't completely fund it, can the church help that Christian family to take care of those needs? Of course they can. But we don't need an orphanage. All right, let's go ahead and just quickly look through this first portion, because I think this is very important, and I want you to think about this. It's at the very, toward the top, right, well, the second paragraph under the head directs the body. As God created each portion of creation, he gave it the work that by his will they were to do. Holy Spirit revealed the different kinds of flesh for fish, birds, animals, and man. Each had a work to do and an environment to do it. Birds were meant to fly, given the flesh and body to do so. Fish were meant to live under the ocean. Even the sun and clouds were given a body necessary to accomplish their work. They are consistent in their work. We can depend on them. They have no will of their own. Therefore, the sun can't say, you know, I'm sick and tired of giving light. I want to give rain. And the bird can't say, I'm tired of flying through the air. I want to live under the sea. So, and we know that. All right? But, and this verse is based on it. Psalms 119. Forever, O Lord, your word is settled in heaven. Your faithfulness endures to all generations. You establish the earth and it abides. They continue this day according to your ordinances, for all are your servants. So can we count on everything to do what God created and designed for it to do? Yeah. And does each thing have a different work? Well, yes, it does. All right, so then, let's look at this next paragraph. When God made Jesus head over all things of the church, which is his body, he gave it the work. He made it clear that this is the only work he sought. All right. The very bottom there, we were created in Christ Jesus. The purpose of that creation was to do the good works God prepared for us to walk in. So it's pretty simple. He made the sun to give light. As long as the sun is giving light, is it doing the will of God? If the sun says, I'm going to give rain, is that the will of God? No, and it's impossible, but I'm just saying that that's what we're doing here. Now, there are many passages, this next paragraph here, there are many passages where God compares the function of things he has already created in the human body to describe the functions he created within Christ's body. All right, and then you can look at it. The hand wants to be what? The foot wants to be what? Foot wants to do the work of the hand. And the ear wants to do the work of the eye. And God says, if it did that, could you hear anymore? So, and that's the problem, and I've seen this happen. Churches of Christ that are focused on orphanages, what happens to the work of evangelism, edification, and benevolence?
Goes away.
See, that becomes secondary. But what did God give the work for? So they're acting like the Son. Where is that? Is that happening? All right. So let's turn to the next page. Oop, I wonder if that didn't look right. That's page 3. Okay, here we go. All right. Just as the material creation and the human body function according to the ordinances God gave them. But what about Adam and Eve? Did he give them work?
Yes.
Tend the garden, eat of all the trees of the garden, but what? Don't eat. And what's the first thing? Well, I won't say the first thing. We don't know how long it was. But it couldn't have been too long because I think Adam was 120 when he had his first son. So it couldn't have been a great passage of time, maybe 10 years, maybe 50 years. But at some point, they changed their work. And as a result of the change of the work, they decided, we want to be like God. We want to know good and evil. We want to be doing more or different than what God created us to do. Now, how'd that work out? See, that's why Jesus had to come. So Jesus puts all things back the way they ought to be, and the first thing the church says is, we want to do what Adam and Eve did. We want to change the work of the church. We want to get involved in activities that you never, ever asked us to do. And is God going to be happy with that? It's like the eye saying, I don't want to see anymore. I want to be the ear, and the ear says, well, I'll be the eyes. Well, what's going to happen if you see out of your ears? Is that going to work out very well? No, because, you're turning your head here to see where you're going to go, and it just doesn't work. And that's the problem with changing the work of the church. The church now becomes hobbled doing things God never intended for it to do. Brian and then Patrick.
Yeah, it's interesting I appreciate how you're presenting this, as it's very simple. But yet, you might think about like the 90s, I believe it was, when members of the church created the Truth Foundation. Hey, it's proclaiming the truth. Hey, we're just having gospel meetings. Hey, we're just teaching. And while they can see things like the Herald of Truth is completely off base and wrong, they couldn't see it within that same Truth Foundation.
Right.
And to your point, they're missing that the church is the pillar and ground of the truth. God doesn't need the Truth Foundation. It can accomplish a whole lot of good, sure, but is this any different than the Herald of Truth? It is not, right? It's still a man-made foundation that's circumventing the process of the church that God wants the truth to
sell. Right. And all the good the Herald of Truth does is going to redound to the glory of the men who created it, right? Is that what God wanted? If they would put the same efforts through the church that they were putting into the Guardian Truth, God would receive the glory and God would be pleased. But for them to create a competition to the church, which is basically what it is competing with the church. And to do that, again, no matter what good it does, it's not doing it for the proper reason. Patrick, you had a comment?
Yeah, you did mention concerning evangelism and partnership, which one thing would be the best. Okay, for me, I base my point on the Bible. Okay, evangelism is number one. Okay. Because if you read the book Luke chapter 8, see what happened. You read 2 or 3, but let's look at verse 3. See what a woman did for Jesus Christ. Because Jesus was preaching the gospel, going from place to place. This is one point in evangelism, to preach the gospel. the Bible said that this woman provide for Jesus and his disciples out of their own account. Why? To support the work of Jesus Christ so that the gospel can go forward. So it will be good that we support the gospel so that the work of the Lord can go forward, that more so can come.
Right.
This is why it's being measured in the book of Luke chapter 8, verse 3. But the woman that do it all that work willingly, you know, that work supposed to do it. So if the church see the need to support the work of the Lord, then we need to do it so that the gospel can go forward.
Right. And I think that's something that we try to do every year when we put out our budget, is we try to show that 90% or 85 to 90% of our budget is going toward what?
Evangelism.
And technically, I guess we could say evangelism and edification, because all preachers are not only evangelism, but what else are they doing?
Edifying.
They're edifying, they're building up. So we in Malawi, they're baptizing, but they're also edifying and protecting the church, because what's going to happen if we baptize a bunch of people and the church goes off into apostasy? So both of them are critical. That's why it's interesting that 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus, there's not really one word about evangelism. What's it all about?
Establishing.
Preach the word. Be urgent in season and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering, for the time will come when they won't endure sound doctrine. And that's repeated again and again and again. Paul says in 1 Timothy 3, I'm writing these things so you will know how men ought to conduct themselves
in the church,
in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. So if you just take 1, 2 Timothy and Titus and you combine it with all the rest of the New Testament, you see that there's a seamless work. First, Peter gets up and preaches the gospel. Then they edify the church. Then when there's benevolent needs, they take care of it. What you see in Acts 2, and we'll talk about this more next week, but what you see in Acts 2 is repeated in Acts 8, in Acts 9, in Acts 10, in Acts 12, in Acts... Every time, that's what happens. Paul comes into town, preaches the gospel, starts a church, spends a year and a half, 2 years, 6 months there, edifying, strengthening. If there's any benevolent needs, like 1 Corinthians 16, they get taken care of. What else is there? See, that's it. Those are the good works God prepared for us to do. And we'll establish this more next week as we get into this a little bit further. And then I'm going to add one more section. I don't think I'll put the first section in anymore. I'll pull it out. But we'll start with the Lord made him head over all things in the church with the work of the church. And then we're going to talk about funding and how God determined to fund these things. All right. Appreciate everybody's comments. And a good class. Appreciate it.